3, side 1, and it is October 28th, 2009. Dr. Farrell?
Well, thanks, Ann. I'd like to review now the major organizational changes and facilities development plans that occurred during my early years as dean. It's interesting to me as I look back that the most significant changes with our organization and with our facilities developed quite early in my deanship, and I wound up spending the first half of the deanship ensuring that these would occur, and then the second half of the deanship actually affecting the changes, sort of reaching a stage of completing the major changes. So the first thing that I had to face was the reaccreditation of the UW Medical School. And that process, which is a very intensive process, led by both the Association of American Medical Colleges and the American Medical Association in a joint committee called the Liaison Committee on Medical Education, was one that I had to address from the beginning, since the school was due for accreditation, as I recall, in 1995. And so I reviewed what happened with the previous accreditation process. I found, to my surprise, how many challenges the school was going to have to achieve reaccreditation, that I had to concentrate on that essentially from the beginning of my period as interim dean. And what we had to address were the deficiencies in our facilities, the outdated curriculum for medical students, financial issues that involved our relationship with the clinical practice plan and the university hospital, and a large number of vacant department chairmanships that had to be filled in the near future in order to make it possible for the school's departments to advance in a fashion that would be coordinated with the advancing of the school. And so we worked very hard on reorganization of the curriculum. We needed to make sure that the first 2 years of basic science education were closely linked to the clinical years of instruction, the third and fourth years, and we had to make sure also that our students would begin to gain some clinical appreciation of clinical education and some actual clinical exposures during their first 2 years. The old concept of 2 years for basic science education followed by 2 years of clinical education was becoming obsolete, and an integrated curriculum was becoming necessary in the eyes of the Liaison Committee on Medical Education. And so we reorganized. Instead of having a separate system planning each of the 4 years, we brought together the third year and the fourth year as an integrated curriculum. And then after that, we ensured that the first 2 years would link well to the third and fourth year. We were very fortunate in getting grants to do this, outside funding, and we had quite a number of grants while in my first 5 years as dean that supported medical education reform and the further development of the statewide campus with the preceptorship program and our Milwaukee clinical campus. In fact, we had one grant from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that was dedicated entirely to the Milwaukee clinical campus and ensuring that our students had experience, good clinical experience with a diversified patient population, particularly underrepresented minorities. We had a grant also from the Howard Hughes Medical Institute supporting our faculty, our junior faculty, in their research endeavors that link to medical education as well. And so this was the first challenge, and we were quite successful. By the time the LCME site visit occurred, we had really done a good job on the reorganization of medical education, and we'd done a good job with the restoration of student morale. The medical students, particularly the first-year students, but also the second-year students, were very upset when Dean Martin was terminated by Chancellor Ward. In fact, they had a, just as in the days when Dean Bowers was relieved, they had a protest. And they really felt that the chancellor firing their dean was a blow to the, not just to the school, but to the students. However, it was interesting that as I and my wife began to work very closely with medical students, attending their special events and working on curriculum reform, addressing some of the needs that had been there for a long time, sort of functioning almost like the dean of students, that the students rapidly responded to this and suddenly were very happy, and it didn't take them long to forget about Dean Martin. And so their morale was very high when the LCME site visit came through. Our school's organizational plans, which I'll describe in a minute, looked good to the LCME, as well as our financial picture. And so we received full accreditation with very minimal criticism of the school, as I recall. That was a big change from the picture back in 1993-94. And so that period of 1994 to 1995 or 96 was really good for the UW Medical School and its students and its statewide campus. Now, some of the major organizational changes that had to occur in addition to reforming the curriculum related to our clinical practice plan. From the time that I joined the faculty in 1977 and dating back even before that, we were organized as 14 department practice plan associations. Each was a separate legal entity, and each one of these department practice plan associations could function as independently as it wanted to, and this made it very difficult to deliver care and to ensure that each of the departments was operating properly with regard to compliance with billing requirements. Even as I earned in pediatrics, submitting bills for patient care. And then we also had a great deal of difficulty as managed care came along, because when patients are in a managed care system like our UCARE program, they have to be treated equally by all the departments. There has to be a system of care provided so that patients are essentially patients of the entire clinical practice plan and not of a separate department, as was the case in the past. So we recognized this in the early 90s, and we began to work on major change to create an integrated academic group practice. And this was a hot topic at the time that I became interim dean, And I had to make a crucial decision by the spring of 1995 when we had developed, under leadership of Dr. Venkat Rao, a plan to form the University of Wisconsin Medical Foundation, a 501c3 organization, a charitable organization that would bring all the, that would have eliminate all of the department practice plan associations overnight. All 14 legal entities would be abolished, and it would bring all clinical faculty under the umbrella of the UW Medical Foundation. And the primary purpose of this organization was to support the medical school, which is something that I liked, and the organization developed a plan to provide the school annually with a substantial amount of money and what was commonly called the dean's tax. It also gave the school a windfall because the clinical practice plan also paid a dean's tax, but always paid it retrospectively. And so I learned in 1995 that if this UW Medical Foundation were formed, the school would be paid from the clinical practice plan as it was eliminated and transformed into UW Medical Foundation, approximately $10 million. This $10 million windfall turned out to be very important because, as I said earlier, when I became dean, there was very little discretionary money available in the entire medical school. I had more money available to me as discretionary money available to me as the chair of pediatrics than I had as dean. But when the $10 million became available, it really did change the picture. So, as I said, in the spring of 1995, when the proposal had been developed to form the UW Medical Foundation, I had to make a decision whether I would be supportive of this or not. It probably needed the support of the interim dean in order to be approved by the faculty in a faculty vote. And 577 faculty physicians had to vote. They had to vote for eliminating their independent legal entity, the Department of Practice Plan Associations, becoming part of this new organization, and becoming formally by contract committed to supporting the school financially, as well as accepting regulation of their own personal compensation. That was a compensation plan was part of this a uniform compensation plan was part of this proposal. So I remember this was a very tough decision for me. There were so many faculty, particularly in strong departments like medicine, that were opposed to this, that I had to really agonize over what I would do. Would I become an advocate and be supportive, or would I oppose this? I remember vividly going to a luncheon meeting at University Club with Richard Culbertson, former associate dean, and some other advisors, and we had a detailed discussion, and Dick Culbertson's advice to me was, Phil, you've got to support this, because if it fails by a vote, you'll be blamed if you don't support it. And if it passes, you'll get some credit, but you'll also get some major advantages for the school in the future. And so you don't have any choice. You need to support this fully. I remembered what Dave Kendig had said to me. You don't want to do too much as dean, but you don't want to do too little. You've got to find the middle ground. And I decided the middle ground would be working in partnership with Dr. Venkat Rao to advocate for this change and try to secure a positive faculty vote.
Could I ask, who determines the compensation for the staff, for the
It was
doctors?
Determined by a formula that was part of the proposal.
So the surgeons and the pediatricians and the dermatologists all?
They would not get the same compensation, but they would get a compensation that was regulated according to what they actually did that is, how much teaching they did, and how much clinical practice, and how much clinical revenue they generated. Mm-hmm. And this then instilled accountability throughout the school, whereas previously, a faculty member had a guaranteed clinical practice plan supplement no matter what he or she did. And this was one of the things that we didn't like about the old clinical practice plan, this guaranteed CPP supplement, where you were guaranteed a certain income no matter what you did. And we felt that in some departments this was leading to less of a commitment and interest in clinical practice. Mm-hmm. And maybe a tendency for some faculty to become lazy. I mean, they didn't have to earn their income. You literally were guaranteed your income no matter what you did. Whereas with UW Medical Foundation, and subsequently this became even stronger as the school put in a mission-based budgeting plan, after that, you have to basically earn whatever your income is going to be. There's no free ride anymore. And that's one of the reasons this was a tough decision for me. But Dick Culbertson was right. I really didn't have much choice. And I liked the proposal anyway, and I liked working with Venkat Rao. And so as partners, we went around to all the different departments. We went to the Milwaukee clinical campus. We advocated for this, we defended it, and when the vote came in, 74% of 577 faculty positions voted for the UW Medical Foundation and endorsed dramatic changes in the school. This is probably the most dramatic, significant change in the clinical departments in the school's entire history, because it really forced interdepartmental associations, synergisms to develop. Faculty of one department absolutely had to work effectively with faculty of another department, and of course, that's the way medicine should be practiced, with doctors working together, not competing with each other. And so once that was formed, and it was clear that this school would benefit in many ways, financially for sure, but even better, that the school could be confident that the UW Medical Foundation would manage the clinical practice of our physicians and make sure that the faculty were compliant, that they followed these increasing regulations that were coming along. Some of our faculty did not and were terminated as a result. Many of them showed up in the Wisconsin State Journal and the Cap Times as being guilty of some bad behavior. Most of the stories were correct in the Cap Times about our faculty who made some mistakes in their particularly their billing practices. And we found, for example, one faculty member who was billing patients at a time when his record showed that he was out of town on a site visit or giving a lecture somewhere. And we had other faculty who were practicing medicine on the side, generating income that should have gone through the clinical practice plan of the UW Medical Foundation, but was an illegal clinical practice activity that is absolutely could not be tolerated. So this was a big change. Almost concurrent with this was the creation of the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics Authority, what's often called the semi-privatization of the university hospital. This was another tough one for me because I kept hearing from the community about the fact that they didn't want the hospital to become private. And the truth is, it wasn't going to become private. People just didn't understand this very complex organizational structure that was being formed. But it was very clear to me that the university hospital no longer could function effectively, particularly in a cost-effective fashion, if it were under the state of Wisconsin for purchasing and personnel actions. It was costing time and money to buy things through the state of Wisconsin. The personnel system could not accommodate the different levels of specialization. For example, nurse anesthetists and intensive care nurses were supposed to be paid the same as nurses working on the ward. And this was ridiculous when in the private sector, these kind of nurses would make two or three times as much money. And we had to make that kind of a change. University Hospital had to be able to remodel and construct new buildings more efficiently and cost effectively. So I saw this one as a no-brainer. To me, this wasn't like the decision to form UW Medical Foundation. This was just a wonderful opportunity for the University Hospital. And I was certain it was going to fly because Governor Tommy Thompson was behind it. And in fact, it didn't look like this was going anywhere for a while until Tommy Thompson came out and said, this hospital has to thrive, this must be done. And I found out later that there might have been some major political advantages for the governor in that all of the state positions, all of the personnel of the University Hospital came off the state books. So it looked like the governor wiped out state employees. And in fact, they didn't get wiped out, they just got converted into a different personnel system. But I think that's one of the reasons Governor Thompson was for it, but I think his fundamental reason was that he was very dedicated to the success of the University Hospital. His family had been treated well there, and he didn't feel that the University Hospital should be constrained by its relationship with the state of Wisconsin. So Tommy was quite a hero on this. And he became a bigger hero in my eyes later with our HealthStar initiative. And that's another major change that occurred. And it occurred in part because our facilities were so deficient that we were threatened during two consecutive reaccreditation processes by the LCME. And we also had faced a situation where the old Wisconsin General Hospital remodeled into the Medical Sciences Center could no longer support our students adequately. I remember going to the old SMI 227 lecture hall in the winter and seeing students with their winter coats on and realizing the temperature in the room was something like 55 to 60 degrees. And when I went back to my office and inquired, I was just told that the old heating system couldn't take care of the lecture halls anymore. That gives you an idea how deficient the building was. And we had problems with research laboratory animals. The animal care facilities were poor in that building, so it was hurting us on the education side and on the research side. So what happened is, as I mentioned before, Wayne McGowan and I visited David Ward at Olin House on a cold, icy day after David had slipped on the ice, sat in his living room. David said, "You're doing all right. I want you to see what you can do about facilities development." And the previous effort by my predecessor was a huge project of about $300 million cost. He wanted about $200 million from the state of Wisconsin, which was impossible. If you look at the state's annual capital budget, it's clear that that's impossible. And Chancellor Ward had told me, "You're going to have to raise some of this money, but if you can bring forward a reasonable proposal, I'll help you try to accomplish it." And my first my first actions on this were actually to go back and review what was originally planned for West Campus development. I actually went back to 1970 when the Clinical Sciences Center was being planned and designed. And to my surprise, I found that two buildings were supposed to be constructed on what became the parking lots around the Clinical Sciences Center. One was an education building, and the other one was a research building. And I always wondered why there was so many surface parking lots all around the Clinical Sciences Center. And the reason is that those spaces were actually set aside for academic buildings. The second thing I did was decide that we had to have both. We had to have the education building and we had to have the research building. But I learned from Chancellor Ward that no school or college gets its own education building, and I had to come up with a plan that would make this look like it was, that wouldn't just make it look like it was more than a medical school building, that it would truly be more than a medical school building, that it would serve the other health sciences schools. So this was my first recognition that dealing with the campus leaders, chancellor and provost, would require sort of a politically astute and a compelling plan that would not necessarily elevate the stature of the medical school without also helping the other health sciences schools. So what I then did was I made the decision that we would call the education building the Health Sciences Learning Center. And it truly would be a learning center, and that it would incorporate the old Middleton Library, which needed to be upgraded, and it would provide modern classrooms that would support expansion of the class size from what was about 145 medical students up to 175. As I saw it, our school could accommodate more students, and we were turning away too many highly qualified applicants. And that this building would also serve the School of Pharmacy and the School of Nursing. And Chancellor Ward liked that, and he also liked the idea I brought forward to have the research building be called the Interdisciplinary Research Complex, because Chancellor Ward was very much in favor of interdisciplinary research, interdisciplinary science, in which basic science departments like biochemistry or physiology work together with clinical departments work with each other. No longer do you have departmental boundaries, but you work around topic areas, strategic priority areas like cardiovascular research, neuroscience, areas like that, that are truly benefit from an interdisciplinary approach. So that was the plan for the research building. Now, it was fortuitous that our LCME site visit was scheduled for November of 1995, and as a member of the Campus Planning Committee, I could get on the agenda for the meeting of November 95, earlier that month, a review of the proposal that I was bringing forward for facilities development. I made the decision to use the term that my predecessor coined, namely HealthStar. There had already been a WISTAR program that Donna Shalala had developed, had been quite successful, that involved joint funding by the state of Wisconsin and gifts from donors. And I really liked the term HealthStar, but it had a tarnished image because my predecessor had used this term so much to describe his $300 million dream that some people felt I shouldn't resurrect that term, and that we should come up with some new label for this. I decided to be persistent and hold with HealthStar. I really liked the term. I knew the word had to be health. It couldn't be medical. I'd learned my lesson by then that if it's about the medical school or if it's about medical research, It doesn't help us as much as if it's about healthcare or health sciences research or health sciences learning. So in November 95, I presented a $150 million proposal to the campus planning committee, half of my predecessor's proposal, and it included the two buildings, the Health Sciences Learning Center for about $50 million and the Interdisciplinary Research Complex for about $100 million. That's 150 total. And I further proposed that we would raise half of that money. We would raise $75 million, a match. Remember, Chancellor Ward was a little bit concerned that if we were successful, the state would realize that that should become the rule for UW-Madison. In fact, in the final version, we committed to raise $100 million. But I said to Chancellor Ward, what else are we going to do? We're not going to get much more from the state, and maybe it'll take us a long time, but we should do our best to raise that kind of money. And he accepted it, so I was able to gain unanimous approval in my presentation to the campus planning committee for the HealthStar, the new version of the HealthStar initiative, the $150 million version. Now, I also put in a request for the Wharf building the same day. I found out that the Wharf building was going to be gifted to the university by the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation. Yeah, so when I presented my proposal to the campus planning committee, I had an interest already in the development of public health programs, community and population health programs in the school, but our best department to lead the way, which was named at the time the Department of Preventive Medicine, was stuck in the old wood products building on Walnut Avenue. It was a terrible facility. I, as mentioned, learned that the Wharf building would be gifted to the university, and so part of my proposal to the campus planning committee was that the medical school be given the Wharf building and be responsible for remodeling it into an academic building, and that this be done as soon as possible because we were putting increasing priority on community and population health programs. And that was also approved, the campus planning committee, and it's the biggest bargain in the school's entire history because the building must be worth at least $25 or $30 million. And we wound up spending $1 million or so to remodel it, but we moved population health sciences department in as preventive medicine's name changed to population health sciences, and we moved in ophthalmology research program that features epidemiology, the so-called Beaver Dam project. We moved cancer epidemiology in. We expanded our graduate programs, so now the graduate programs of the Population Health Sciences Department are the largest in the school, over 100 graduate students a year. And so the Wharf building turned out to be a key element. Now, after the campus planning committee approved the HealthStar proposal, the real issue was whether or not we could get the money to do the construction projects. The School of Pharmacy was actually in worse shape than us, and so the School of Pharmacy had to get their new building moving ahead of ours. I realized that, and I was happy to have them move ahead. But I also needed to have some credibility if we were going to be able to go forward with the HealthStar plan. And so, fortunately, the UW-Madison campus was willing to allow us to hire an architectural firm to do some planning for the new buildings on the West Campus. Those plans turned out to be quite helpful, as I'll describe in a minute, because we started to gain credibility as we could show concrete plans that were achievable in a reasonable period of time, and as we began to raise money through our philanthropy efforts associated with the University Foundation. The more the money that came in, the better off we were in terms of our credibility. At that time, the dean of pharmacy came to me and told me that they had a problem with the siting of the pharmacy building, and they had about a $5 million shortfall in their fundraising effort for what became known as Rennebaum Hall. He asked me if the site that had been reserved for the Health Sciences Learning Center could be used for the pharmacy building, and we would essentially trade sites. I liked the sound of this immediately because it would put the Health Sciences Learning Center back where it originally was shown on the plans for development of the Clinical Sciences Center going back to 1970, adjacent to the University Hospital, so that the students and the residents could easily go back and forth. And so I accepted that, and then I also told him, I'll do what I can to help you with the $5 million that you need to raise, because at that time we were starting to bring in substantial amount of money through our fundraising efforts, which would eventually total, I'm told, about $750 million during my deanship. $750 million from the day I started as dean until the day I finished, came into the University Foundation. So I was asked at some point to visit Governor Tommy Thompson's office, and I think this was in the spring of 1996 or the fall of 1996, and I was able to bring with me the plans for the Health Sciences Learning Center and the advanced plans for the Learning Center and the Interdisciplinary Research Complex. I didn't know it at the time, but Governor Thompson liked to look at construction plans. And he really liked to become very intimately involved in construction projects of the state of Wisconsin. It was almost, in a sense, like a pleasure for him, or a hobby almost, to get engaged in the details of construction projects. And it didn't surprise me, because while we were developing the Ronald McDonald House, and I got to know him through his wife, Sue Ann Thompson, I realized that he was paying attention to what we were putting into the house, what we were doing with the second floor, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll never forget this. I was in his office. I showed him the plans. I laid it out on his desk. I sat in front of the governor's desk. And he asked me why this building was here and not there. And he said, you know, I think you ought to move that building over a little bit. And then he said to me, well, how much money do you need? And I said, well, we need $150 million. And he said, well, you're not going to get $150 million, but I think I can get you $50 million. And put that preferentially into the education building, the Health Sciences Learning Center. And at the time, he made a joke about the fact that we were both Irish, and it was because I was Irish that I was going to come out of there with $50 million. So when I came out with $50 million, you can imagine what the campus leaders in the Regents thought. They were pretty impressed. Probably no one had gone into the governor's office before and come out with $50 million for a university project. But at that time, then, we realized we had to raise $100 million for the total construction projects. And it turned out to be a little more than that, because we made the decision to peel off $5 million from the $50 million to finish the School of Pharmacy project, Rennebaum Hall. There were people that didn't feel that the medical school should give money to the School of Pharmacy, but this again was kind of a no-brainer for me, because we were not going to get our building up before pharmacy got built. And so the way that the HealthStar initiative legislation was written was to take care of all the health sciences schools of the University of Wisconsin. This idea that surfaced in my discussions with Chancellor Ward. And so $5 million went to pharmacy and Rennebaum Hall was constructed. $45 million was left for the Health Sciences Learning Center. And I think we took 35 of the 45 and raised about another 15 to construct a $50 million building that was finished in 2004. And then we took the $10 million and we used it to further plan the interdisciplinary research complex, and then we raised about $100 million or $120 million through gifts and grants to finish the first tower and part of the second tower of the interdisciplinary research complex. Now this building, the IRC as we called it, has been changed in its name to the Wisconsin Institutes for Medical Research, or WIMR, by my successor. And I think that the name change is a good development, because Wisconsin Institutes for Medical Research better reflects what's going on in the way of research in those buildings. Plus, it turns out that my successor doesn't have to worry as much as I did about using the word medical. I had a politically sensitive deanship. I don't think that it's quite the same anymore. But at that time, there was a very peculiar attitude towards the medical school. There was a certain degree of disrespect and also a certain degree of confusion and maybe some resentment. It was well known on campus that our clinical faculty were paid more, generating more in the way of income than non-clinical faculty, and there's no question that's caused some resentment over time. But the Wisconsin Institutes for Medical Research are now the best research facilities on the campus and among the best in the world. And so we now have the best learning center in the health sciences. There's nothing that compares with the Health Sciences Learning Center in the entire world. And we also have the best research complex. So I'm very happy about that too. Now there's one other major organizational change I want to review, and then we'll talk about the Blue Cross gift and how that happened. First of all, after we formed the UW Medical Foundation, it was very clear to me that the accountability instilled in our clinical faculty needed to include accountability for their educational efforts, their teaching, and that we needed to have accountability in the basic science departments as well for their teaching activities. Because basic science faculty, given their choice in general, might prefer to do research as compared with teaching. In fact, on the UW-Madison campus, you could probably say that about almost all faculty. Given their choice, they tend to be researchers who, in many cases, are also excellent teachers, but the demands of research and the joys of research sometimes are greater than those of teaching. And so we needed to be sure that our teachers felt accountable for their programs in terms of the quantity of teaching they did and the quality. And so we put in place something that the LCME was quite interested in, and that was being strongly advocated by the Association of American Medical Colleges, namely a mission-based budgeting system. So that the budgets of the school, the allocation of annual budgets or funds from the school, are linked for each department to the teaching quantity and quality that's done that that's accomplished by the faculty of those departments. This took quite a while to accomplish this major change, moving money around the departments of the school, because in general, on the Madison campus, departments become accustomed to getting a certain amount of money every year, and they're not accustomed to having their budget cut, or having their budget increased for that matter. But we knew that we had some imbalances. Some departments were relatively underfunded, like the Department of Oncology, and some departments were relatively overfunded, which I thought was the case in the Department of Medicine when I looked at how much money was going to the medicine department. And so we worked very intensively in the late 90s to put this plan in place. We had to have it voted in like we did with UW Medical Foundation. But the basic science departments were willing to vote this in because they thought they'd be getting money from the clinical departments. The clinical departments ultimately were willing to vote it in because in general the clinical faculty thought that the lazy faculty could no longer earn money for not working. And so this got voted in, and in the final phase of it, I decided instead of calling it mission-based budgeting to call it the MAMA plan for mission-aligned management and allocation. And so now our faculty fondly think of this as the Dean's MAMA plan. And so since about the year 2000, 2001, all of the allocation of school funds is done according to what actually is happening in departments with regard to their teaching, the quantity and the quality of teaching, and they're also rewarded for bringing in extramural research grants. There's a bonus given to departments who that are able to bring in research grants and pay part of the salary cost to faculty through research grants. So the combination of UW Medical Foundation and the MAMA plan really were very, very important organizational changes for the school, and it really made a difference over the years. And it's something that my successor really likes, and something that has made us a national model for how other medical schools might function with regard to using the school funds. Now, one reason we were able to do this, these kind of changes, was that, frankly, we were loaded with money throughout almost my entire deanship. Our faculty were extremely successful at bringing in research grants from the NIH. The proportion of research grants on the Madison campus, combined with the amount of funding through gifts, totals up to a level in which the medical school accounts for 40 or 50% of all the research funding, and certainly research expenditures on the Madison campus. So that was a big help to us. We got a number of institutional grants, like the Howard Hughes Medical Institute grant that could be used across departments. We had Robert Wood Johnson Foundation grant I mentioned. We had a General Clinical Research Center grant, and our financial picture was good, but it was only going to get better as things turned out as my deanship progressed, in part because the UW Medical Foundation was much more financially successful than the clinical practice plan, and therefore the so-called Dean's Tax increased. And the university hospital became even more supportive financially of the school as it functioned better as the university hospital authority. As the hospital generated more revenue and was more cost effective and efficient, the school was rewarded with more support of faculty. So we had multiple sources of revenue that were all increasing at the same time. But the biggest windfall was yet to come, and that's the Blue Cross Blue Shield gift of $300 million. which I first learned about on the stage at graduation in May of 1999. It's interesting how I learned about it, but it's even more interesting how we planned for this money and what we were able to do with it. So I was, as I say, on the stage at graduation with the other deans and with Chancellor Ward. And this graduation ceremony sometimes is boring for deans because you have to sit through all of the speeches, and you don't just go to one graduation ceremony, you go to several now at the Kohl Center. And often, while the diplomas are being handed out to several hundred students going by, the deans will chat among themselves, or the chancellor will come over, and or the provost will come over and chat with one of the deans to pass the time up on the stage. And we don't think of this as looking disrespectful to the students, because as the students are coming across the stage, they're usually somewhat rowdy, and it's a happy occasion. But I remember that Chancellor Ward told me that he wanted to chat with me, and we walked around behind the row of chairs where the deans were seated, and he said, "Phil, I wonder if you've heard anything about the possibility of a large gift coming from Blue Cross. There's something that's just surfaced in the last week that I learned about from Sandy Wilcox at the University Foundation. See what you can find out, let me know." I think that was Sunday. I think on Monday I heard the whole story. And basically the story is this, that Blue Cross Blue Shield United of Wisconsin wished by, because of a decision made by the CEO, the board of directors, and a special committee assigned the responsibility to study this and make a recommendation, they wished to be converted into a publicly traded insurance company. And in order to be approved by the insurance commissioner for this conversion, Blue Cross Blue Shield United of Wisconsin would have to donate to the people of Wisconsin the equity value of the company, because over the years, as the company grew and became successful, the company was protected against having to pay taxes to the state. These conversions of private insurance public insurance companies into private entities were happening around the country, and some were successfully managed, and other attempted conversions were not successful. But the leaders of Blue Cross Blue Shield United of Wisconsin made the decision that they wanted to donate their equity value to the state's two medical schools rather than distributing the money directly to the people of Wisconsin. And they wanted to do that because they felt that generations of Wisconsin citizens in the future would benefit from the good work done by the two medical schools, UW Medical School and the Medical College of Wisconsin. It was estimated that Blue Cross Blue Shield United of Wisconsin was worth somewhere between about $100 and $700 million at that point in time. The true value of the company would be determined by appraisals done as part of the application for conversion that was presented to the insurance commissioner. The directors and special committee of Blue Cross made the decision that they wanted this money to go to enhance public health in Wisconsin through programs and projects that would be developed by the two schools. We actually were quite well prepared to take that on as a change in our mission, because from the time I started as dean, I was very interested, as many pediatricians are, in balancing traditional medical care with preventive care, prevention of disease. And in fact, when David Kindig asked me If you had to dream, what would be your fondest hope for your time as dean? And I told him back in the fall of 1994, I would like to transform the school into an integrated school of medicine and public health. And when this Blue Cross gift surfaced, I realized this was the opportunity to do that. And by that time, our preventive medicine department was changing to become the population health sciences department. Our many of our clinical departments were much more interested in prevention of disease. Good examples were cancer prevention, prevention of cardiovascular disease, prevention of stroke, and this strategy made very good sense for the future. And in fact, I learned it actually was part of the mission statement of the American Medical Association, the betterment of public health. And so we decided to go after this as intensively as we could. And I was invited to Milwaukee in June of 1999, less than a month after I heard from Chancellor Ward, for an announcement being made by Governor Tommy Thompson with District Attorney Jim Doyle present. Both of them, in fact, came to the podium to speak, and they voiced their enthusiastic support for the conversion and the gifting of the money, the equity value of the company to the to two medical schools. So that was the way this all developed, but we really had to work hard to get the money. It took two or three years of hard work, traveling around the state of Wisconsin, holding public hearings to find out what the people of Wisconsin really wanted, what were the diseases that were of greatest concern, and we also had to generate support among a number of organizations in the state who would prefer to have this money rather than have it go to the two medical schools. And in fact, one of those organizations challenged the insurance commissioner when she signed off and approved the conversion, and this donation of the money to the two medical schools went all the way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court before it was approved, as I recall, in March of 2002. So we basically spent a few years working to get the money. And many of our faculty were very frustrated by that. I remember one of our leaders. So after we obtained this approval by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, we made the decision that we would organize rigorously according to the administrative order issued by the insurance commissioner, in which she prescribed exactly how the decision should be made and the money should be managed. She appointed an oversight committee named the Wisconsin United for Health Foundation. That group received part of the money as stock in Blue Cross Blue Shield. That's the way we received the money also, as stock, which we then sold on the market for $300 million. The value of this company actually turned out to be about $600, $650 million, and that's how we got $300 million, roughly half of it. But Wisconsin United for Health Foundation then had part of what we considered our money, but their responsibility was oversight. And we were required, in the insurance commissioner's order, to appoint a 9-person oversight and advisory committee that would be that would include one appointee from the insurance commissioner, four university appointees, and four community representatives representing special interests like women's health, rural health, urban health, minority health, etc. So we put together this oversight and advisory committee around the year 2002-2003 academic year is when it started. I recruited a director of the program who was a former senior associate superintendent of the hospital, Eileen Smith, who I had great confidence in. And we then met frequently to make some decisions about how to spend the money. At that time, I had a real challenge on my hands to try to finish raising the money for the Health Star Initiative. And so I persuaded the Oversight Advisory Committee to commit a relatively small amount of the money to match gifts that would come in. So that we could go to a donor, ask for a large gift, for example, $1 million gift, and we could say we'll match that with $1 million. That was our idea for using part of the Blue Cross money to improve our infrastructure, basically. We were challenged at that point in time to try to put together a new program in public health, having such deficient space. The Health Sciences Learning Center wasn't finished. The IRC still needed a substantial amount of money to be built. And incidentally, that IRC is dedicated to prevention of disease. For example, the cancer research laboratories of the IRC are very much oriented towards preventing either breast cancer or prostate cancer. So from my point of view, it fit well with the concept. The Oversight Advisory Committee unanimously approved using part of the money for facilities development. It was a fairly small part of the money, less than 10% as I recall. However, the word got out about this, and in general, these community organizations didn't like it. The university liked it. The Blue Cross leaders were comfortable with it, but community organizations that already felt like they got mistreated objected. The word got to the new governor, Jim Doyle, and I remember Governor Doyle asked me to come down to his office for a chat, and I went to see him with one of our vice chancellors, Al Fish, who knew him quite well. Governor Doyle asked me to come in to the office by myself. He wanted to have a private meeting, and we had a friendly but definitive conversation in which Governor Doyle told me that he had assured these community organizations that the money wouldn't be used for buildings, and therefore
with Dr. Farrell.
Well, I'm just continuing now with the discussion about my important meeting with Governor Jim Doyle, which must have occurred around 2003, and when I had the private meeting with the governor in his office, it was very clear to me that he had made up his mind that there was no way we would use any Blue Cross Blue Shield money for facilities development, buildings. He was quite candid with me and explained why. And I attempted to persuade him to think otherwise, maybe reconsider his position on this because of what I thought was some compelling considerations in terms of the school's ability to move ahead in public health programs. And I remember him saying, you don't need that money to get these buildings constructed. You can raise it by other methods. You can get more gifts. He said, I'll help you raise more money. And then he said something to me that was convincing. He said, I don't want you to leave my office today and think that there's any hope whatsoever that you can use this money for buildings, because if something comes forward that includes this money as a construction project, I can disapprove it down the road. And the message to me was, forget it. And as I left his office, and he was such a friendly person about this, I mean, this was a, I appreciated the fact that we had a private conversation. I'd gotten to know Jim Doyle previously when he was Attorney General. In fact, Paul Carbone and I visited District Attorney Doyle on a couple of occasions. And I liked him and still like him. And I really respected him for having a, what I would call a man-to-man conversation about this in his office without any staff members present. I had never gone to Tommy Thompson's office without quite a number of staff in the room. And I'd been there a few times. So this was quite different for me, but it was a definitive conversation. And I remember as I left the Capitol thinking, to myself, there's no way that we're ever going to use any of this money for buildings, and the governor's probably right. We probably can raise the money in other ways, and it probably will help our image to withdraw this proposal. So even though it had been approved. So the next time I met with the Oversight and Advisory Committee, I told them in no uncertain terms that I was quite confident we could raise the money through private gifts and grants, and we'd get the buildings constructed, and that we would, I was withdrawing my proposal to use the part of the money to match gifts. And that was that. I wasn't going to bring that forward again. The Oversight and Advisory Committee said, we were very happy with your proposal. We don't have any problem with this. But I said, well, the governor does, and let's respect the governor, and we'll move forward. And we did. And that was actually a good decision on my part. In a sense, not much of a decision had to be made since the governor had made it for me. But it turns out that we did quite well in raising the money anyway. So, and I'll explain how we came up with some of the largest gifts in a few minutes for the Interdisciplinary Research Complex. But let me just finish with the story about the Blue Cross Blue Shield gift. Once we had secured the money and put some plans in place for new programs, we organized, as the insurance commissioner's order required, a five-year plan that had to be approved by the Board of Regents, and it was. We made sure that community organizations were aware of this, that they understood they were going to get some money through grants that we would make, but that they would need to partner with our faculty to pursue new programs, whether they be planning projects or whether they be major, what we call project implementation efforts. We would work more closely with community organizations in the future in the realm of public health. And that first five-year plan went quite well. And when we got to the year 2005, we were very pleased with how we were being received by community organizations. Of course, they were getting money from us, so maybe that helped with our relationships.
Imagine.
But I realized at the time we still didn't have a school of public health in the state of Wisconsin, and yet we were forming all of the elements of a school of public health within the medical school, including a good master's in public health program. And so I made the decision to ask that the request that the name of the school be changed to the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And we brought that proposal forward through the Academic Planning Council of the school. all the departments of the school, the university committee, the UW-Madison Academic Planning Council, and it sailed through. This was a big change to essentially form a new school, the School of Public Health on the Madison campus, integrated with the medical school. But everyone knew we had $300 million. They didn't know how we were spending it, but they knew $300 million is a lot of money. We weren't asking for any state money to form a new school, and this project was just going quite well. All the way to the Board of Regents, when I found out prior to the meeting, when I was to make the presentation, that the mayor of Milwaukee, Tom Barrett, was unhappy with this proposal to create a School of Public Health in Madison. And Mayor Barrett's opinion, which was very clearly stated in a speech he made before the Board of Regents, was that the public health problems of the state of Wisconsin are in Milwaukee, they're not in Madison. So why isn't the state creating a School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee? That's what he wanted. And I gave my speech to the Board of Regents, and either as part of my speech or in response to a question, said that I'd be very happy to have a School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee. The state could use two schools of public health, but that we were going to be quite active in Milwaukee, much more active in the past, and that we were going to initiating a large number of public health projects in southeastern Wisconsin in general, and particularly in Milwaukee, and that we saw our School of Medicine Public Health as a statewide institution, and that we didn't need a new building. We had the Wharf building, and that we would like the people of Milwaukee and the mayor to see us as part of their as an asset for their future. Well, Mayor Barrett held his ground, and eventually it was decided, after we had some meetings between UW-Milwaukee and UW-Madison, that indeed if UW-Milwaukee wanted to go ahead with the School of Public Health, raising whatever money was possible, that could be done. And once that was all settled, within about a month, with some very intensive meetings, including me meeting with Mayor Barrett and City Hall in Milwaukee, the Board of Regents made the decision 1 or 2 months after the initial presentation that the school's name would be changed to UW School of Medicine and Public Health. So it was really the Blue Cross Blue Shield money that funded the dream I had in the fall of 1994 to create a School of Public Health in a new model, an integrated School of Medicine and Public Health. And so that's our future. And this is a model that other medical schools in the United States are now looking at, because the future of medicine will be a combination of intervention and prevention. And more our students are learning about the value of the public health approach. And so this is one of the things I'm particularly proud of. As I was completing my deanship, this was one of the major organizational changes that I really felt very good about. Now, it's remarkable to me that we've kept up a good relationship with the governor, Jim Doyle, despite our disagreement, and also with Mayor Tom Barrett. The mayor recently spoke September 17, 2009 at a dinner meeting we had in Milwaukee, and indicated how supportive he was of our efforts in Milwaukee. In fact, he said in his speech that I might have to eat crow tonight, but I'm going to tell you how happy I am about how this has developed. Now, one of the things he's happy about is we made a commitment to invest $10 million of the Blue Cross money in an effort to decrease African-American infant mortality, particularly in Milwaukee, but also Racine, Kenosha, and Beloit. And so When the mayor sees $10 million coming over from the UW School of Medicine Public Health, naturally he feels like we followed through on what we said we would do before the Board of Regents. So I'm very happy about that. I'm also very happy that when I was challenged to complete the first component of the interdisciplinary research complex and had to visit the governor's office one more time with Chancellor John Wiley, who was not as keen on that project. Governor Doyle was very supportive of my position and said this has to go forward. And the chancellor, who, as I said, was not as supportive as I would have hoped, certainly Chancellor Wiley was not as supportive as Chancellor Ward, heard the message from the governor loud and clear that this project would go forward on time. And even though Chancellor Wiley did not come to the dedication of the interdisciplinary research complex, nor the dedication of the Health Sciences Learning Center, Governor Doyle was there, and he talked about the times that we had spent together. In fact, he said in one of his dedication speeches that Phil and I haven't always seen eye to eye on some of these projects, but we've worked together to get them done. And I think that's the important lesson that I learned in working with politicians, especially high-level political leaders like governor of the state of Wisconsin, the district attorney, the mayor of Milwaukee, that you have to be patient and willing to accommodate their views, and that you're going to gain nothing by destroying a relationship, but that if you can build a relationship, it'll, if you can invest in building a relationship, it'll pay dividends in the long run. So I would have to say, as I conclude this the summary of my deanship, that the biggest lessons that I learned along the way are that the UW Medical School and now the UW School of Medicine Public Health has to advance in spite of the UW Madison campus and its leadership. We have struggled over many decades in trying to fit properly and be accepted widely on the Madison campus. But we're in an era now where I believe this has happened. But that doesn't mean that we might not have a reversal of this good fortune in the future. But our relationships with the faculty and the leaders of the Madison campus are really very good now. And it's something that I feel very good about. Also, we learned that we can have good relationships with leaders of the state of Wisconsin at all levels, not just the governor, but in the Department of Facilities Development. We learned that we could work very well with the bureaucrats downtown who have the responsibility for facilities construction projects. If we take our time and establish good interpersonal relationships, it pays off for us in the long run. I've also learned that our faculty, despite the fact that they're an independent bunch, are willing to embrace change as long as it isn't pushed on them too hard or too fast. And I've learned that they like to chew on the bone a long time before they are comfortable moving forward with a major organizational change. But if they can be convinced and they do come on board, the wonderful thing is with our shared faculty governance system, they feel like they're part of the change. And I think this is one reason why making changes here, once they've been decided upon, generally goes pretty well. Whereas in other medical schools, when a dean tries to impose by an autocratic leadership style a change, faculty who resent it will resist the change. And here, the more we can do sort of from the bottom up rather than the top down, the better off we are. I've also found that that helped me recruit department chairs. I think I recruited almost 30 department chairs in my time as dean. But the people I recruited generally liked this philosophy where they would be a part of a team, a management and leadership team, and that they could instill that same kind of philosophy into their faculty, whether it be clinical faculty working as a team of caregivers, or whether it be basic science faculties working together on a course, sort of team teaching. That has gone very well here on this campus. Another thing I learned is that, and of course I had this luxury throughout almost my entire deanship, having plenty of money, but one thing I learned is that you shouldn't restrict your vision, your ideas for future development based on financial considerations. I think that really hurt the Department of Pediatrics in the old days of the turmoil between St. Mary's Hospital and Madison General Hospital over the newborn intensive care unit, where we let money influence our decision making. I think it hurt the school after the Clinical Sciences Center was constructed, when the dean at the time felt that the money wasn't there to follow through on the master plan and put the academic building and the research building on the parking lots where they should have been in the beginning of time. The dean was more worried about being constrained by money than I was as dean. Even though I didn't know where I'd get the $100 million, I was willing to assume that we would get it done one way or another. I forgot to mention that one of the key developments in the final funding of the Interdisciplinary Research Complex was another major role by Tommy Thompson. Tommy moved to Washington, D.C. and was the Secretary of Health and Human Services when I realized that the National Institutes of Health, which was under his authority, had construction grants available and might be willing to respond favorably to an application we would submit. I actually was on a trip to Ireland with Governor Thompson involving biotechnology development and collaborations between the United States and Ireland when we chatted about this, and he said, "I'll do what I can to help you." And sure enough, when we applied with some terrific applications to do breast cancer and prostate cancer research, Secretary Thompson was able to sign off on what became, as I recall, about $30 million of construction grant funds. And so when Tommy came out to make the announcement in Madison from Washington, D.C., he pointed out in his speech that this is the second time Phil came to the well to get me to help. But the governor and then the Secretary Thompson was so committed to our cancer research efforts that I really felt that his heart was in this from the beginning, and it really did make a big difference for us because we needed that money to put us over the top to finish that project. And so again, I learned that working with these great, powerful political leaders, you have to find the common ground and keep building your relationship, and it really, investing in those relationships really paid off for me.
That Irish link is very good.
Yeah, the Irish link helped a lot too, with both Thompson and Doyle. One last thing I wanted to comment on. I was really very fortunate with the help that I had. My wife, from the beginning of time, was supportive. She and I considered the time we spent with the medical students to be the joy of the job. And so oftentimes when I was really tired of some major political or administrative challenge, we would spend time with the medical students. And this was so inspiring and uplifting that it sort of sustained me and gave me more energy. And the alumni really appreciated this because they hadn't seen a dean since William Middleton that was willing to spend quality time with medical students. But in fact, I often had a medical student or two or three doing research with me in the summer, and I really got to know the presidents of the Medical Student Association very, very well, and that that helped me. And the associate and assistant deans that I recruited were all absolutely superb. We were an excellent leadership team, just like the clinical department chairs were another team. And I think that in the final analysis was probably why I had success with these major organizational changes, these challenges to transform the school and with the construction projects. So I finished up a deanship that was longer than I'd planned. I didn't plan for more than 10 years. I didn't want to finish my career on the UW-Madison faculty as an administrator. But when we made the decision to recruit a new dean, I told Chancellor Wiley I would stay on board until the new dean came. He was very happy about that, and I wound up, instead of 10 years, doing something like 11 years and 8 months. I was thrilled with the success of recruiting my successor, and I spent a few months trying to help him get oriented, and since then I've been very happy to return to my original love, which is pediatrics and newborn medicine, particularly newborn screening for cystic fibrosis, and the project of dedicated to reducing African-American infant mortality. So that's what I'll work on the rest of my career here in Madison.
There, you have something, cystic fibrosis newborn screening, CME presentation in 32 U.S. cities. Is that?
That's good. Yes, and the original, the interesting thing is, after I resigned as dean, in fact, I think it was the month that my successor was appointed, I heard from the National Institutes of Health that my R01 research grant, which I had already held for about 23 years, was being renewed for another 5 years. And that's about the right amount of time, in my view, for my post-deanship career. And this is a research grant that funds studies on newborn screening for cystic fibrosis. And this project has been quite successful, to the point where since I finished as dean, we've gone from about 6 states in this country screening newborns for cystic fibrosis to the point where in December, just a month and a half, the entire nation will be screening newborns for CF when Texas begins. And so I'm frequently invited to make presentations, give seminars, for example, lectures all over the United States and in Europe. And so I found that when I finished as dean, I became just as busy as I was as dean, but very focused in this area of newborn screening for cystic fibrosis. And when I totaled up the number of presentations I had made in the year or so after I finished my deanship and oriented my successor, there were 44 invited presentations in the United States and in Europe. So this has really been a an interesting new career for me, and a nice way to finish up as a faculty member on the Madison campus.
Wonderful.
And it's wonderful to go back to your roots, as I started kind of 1977, focused on newborn babies, and that's sort of the way I'm finishing my career. Newborn babies, whether they be African Americans at risk for death or babies at risk for the disease cystic fibrosis.
Are you practicing clinical medicine?
Yes, not as much as I'd like. It turns out I thought I'd be doing a lot more clinical practice, but there's so many young, energetic pediatric pulmonologists on our faculty that they're very happy to take the referrals, and so I don't have much in the way of clinical practice anymore. While I was dean, almost all of my patients grew up and became adults. And when that happens in a patient with cystic fibrosis or asthma, some other respiratory disorder, we transition them to the chest medicine program of the medicine department. We sort of feel that pediatricians should not be taking care of adults, especially when they need to be hospitalized. They don't want to come into the children's hospital, naturally. So my patients almost all grew up while I was dean. So what I do now is I interpret pediatric pulmonary function test, and I see just a couple of patients in clinic. Don't do any inpatient management as an attending physician. And I haven't returned to neonatal intensive care because I'm really not needed there either. And I certainly feel like I'm busy enough now.
That's good. Well, is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, I think that pretty well covers it. I am really happy I stayed at UW-Madison. There are a lot of people who introduced me as having been here since 1977 and wonder how a faculty member could stay in one institution for so long. But frankly, I learned when I moved from National Institutes of Health in 1977, it's very difficult to move to a new environment. And I really feel like that was a great decision to come here and to stay here. And I would not be able to enjoy my career as much if I'd gone somewhere else. I stay out of the way now as low profile, and particularly stay out of the way of the new dean. But it's such a pleasure for me to walk around the West Campus and see all these buildings and
yes.
see the medical students and the Health Sciences Learning Center thriving and you know, see the kind of research programs going on in the Wisconsin Institutes for Medical Research and elsewhere. That, you know, it's really a lot of joy in the job just to observe what's going on these days.
Well, I think a great many of us appreciate what you've done here. I'm very glad you stayed.
Well, thank you, Ann, and thank you for the interview.
Well, it was wonderful. Thank you.